Beate Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate. Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our programs, social justice, different cultures, or interfaith relations. Today, my visitor is John Pell. John, a very warm welcome and hi to our radio program.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm pleased to be here.
Dr. John Pell is a historian of religious and professor at the United Lutheran Seminary in Philadelphia, Gettysburg, United States. He received his PhD from the University of Chicago Divinity School. He's a public theologian, a teacher, a pastor, and community activist. He's the author of and editor of several books. His most recent book is a biography with the title Fethullah Gulen, A Life of Hizmet, Why a Muslim Scholar in Pennsylvania Matters to the World. John is currently visiting New Zealand on invitation of the Pearl of Island Foundation. John, you are a Lutheran pastor, professor, and community activist. What made you write a biography on Fethullah Gulen, a Turkish Muslim?
It's a great question. Of course, it's a big question as well. My previous book was on religions and violence. The title of the book is Empire of Sacrifice, The Religious Origins of American Violence. And it looked at the way people, unfortunately, misused and abused religion to create harm along the lines of age, race, and gender in American history. It was not a pleasant book to write. It was painful. So as a sequel to that book, I began looking at religious peace builders, people around the globe who have taken their faith, practice it with integrity, which produces inner peace, of course, but which also can inspire movements for peace. So people such as Mohandas Gandhi or the recent Nobel Peace Prize winner, who happens to be a Lutheran, Lima Bowie. These individuals have inspired greater justice and peace in their communities and in their nations by drawing on the deep wells of spirituality and theology to unite people. So I was studying a variety of these examples, and Mr. Gulen jumped out to me as someone who has not yet had a critical biography written in English. So as I grew more familiar with him and his writings, and as I grew more familiar with the people of Hizmet, the people of service, like the folks here of the
Pearl of Island Foundation.
Yes, the Pearl of Island Foundation.
And Hizmet means service.
Hizmet means service in Turkish. Yes, that's correct. As I became more familiar with those people, I really saw analogies between the kinds of movements that Gandhi and Lima Bowie and Martin Luther King Jr. and Lech Walesa and Poland and Mother Teresa, Sister Helen Prejean in the United States had inspired. And so I undertook to study Turkish and began the research in 2010. And I was honestly looking for a happier story. Of course, unfortunately, many of the events in Turkey recently have turned tragic. And I should have known this because religious peace builders are often among the people who are targeted most by demagogues and by people in power through slander, through propaganda, and through falsehoods. And that's been the case with Mr. Gulen and people close to him as well, unfortunately.
So you first looked at the negatives of religion, and then you thought there must be something positive. Otherwise, religions wouldn't survive so long. And so you thought about the positive ways. It's like when I started the radio program, I heard a lot of radio programs about religion that were a bit negative. So I thought I'd like to bring some good stories. So I'm happy that you wrote a positive book, or you wrote a book about peace builders, mm-hmm. peace builders across cultures, nations, religions?
Yes. The book began as with the title A Coming Religious Peace, emerging exactly as you said, out of the fact that our traditions have endured for millennia. There's a reason for that. And that reason is they promote what I call deep peace. As the Apostle Paul puts it, a peace that surpasses understanding. And it is that practice of deep peace that I see evident in Mr. Guillen's life and in the global Hizmet movement. So yes, I was looking for examples of how religion promotes peace to help explain how they have endured for so long and to help translate our spiritual traditions for secular people who may be inclined to accept the narrative that religions are always part of the problem.
Yeah.
Now this isn't, right? This isn't to deny that some horrific things have been done, unfortunately, in the name of God. But if you look at human history, and especially recent history, the most significant advocates for peace and the most significant movements for peace have emerged out of movements and people who are deeply grounded in a tradition and who are capable of building bridges across traditions and developing interreligious coalitions. Mm-hmm. And that to me is very exciting. It's also something that's very fragile. As a historian, I can sort of date the origin of the interreligious movement to 1914 when a German Lutheran and an English Quaker in the middle of World War I, just as World War I was getting started, said, "Our nations are at war, but our religion impels us to work for peace." And they founded the Fellowship of Reconciliation, which endures down to today. And, of course, there have been many other interreligious peace-building efforts since then. And Mr. Guillen and the people of Hizmet are very much in that tradition, which I see growing around the globe, which is actually a very hopeful insight, I hope.
Yeah. For those of you who are listening to this program, it's Muffin Talk with Beate. The program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or visit our website or Facebook page at Tengaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Center. My visitor today is Dr. John Pahl, and he's a historian and Lutheran pastor who wrote a book about Fethullah Gulen. And he considers Fethullah Gulen as one of the peace builders and bridge builders. And I think that's what we are also doing in our interfaith council. We are building bridges. So it's not to water down any religion, but we are building bridges. Because as you say, if we are believing in God, whatever kind of faith we have, it's still, we are more interested in peace maybe than if we just think that we are just material and then we are gone.
Indeed. Mr. Guillen has often been depicted as a political figure. And he has usually been depicted as a political figure by his enemies. So to understand him only with a political or an economic lens is to misunderstand him and to misinterpret his significance. As I studied his life, he was born in a tiny rural village in northeastern Turkey, Korucuk, and was raised in Erzurum, which is also it's a big city now, but it's provincial. And I actually asked the question, it was a question that was asked about Jesus, can anything good come out of Erzurum? And the implicit answer, of course, is yes, because Mr. Guillen then practiced as a preacher and scholar and teacher.
So he was a practicing Muslim, and he was like an imam?
Yes, a teacher and preacher. Initially in Edirne, which is in the complete northwestern corner of Turkey, so from the northeast to the northwest. And Edirne is a very Greek community in Thrace, very secular. And so he said about his experience there, At first, I was preaching Erzurum in Edirne, and I had to learn to preach Edirne in Edirne. And that's one of the distinctive elements of the Hizmet movement, is that wherever people inspired by Fethullah Gulen land, they emphasize local, local, local. That is, building bridges with people to develop and foster trust. Because trust is the first fruit of this deep peace. When we understand that we are, I'm going to use some Lutheran speak here, when we understand that we are saved by grace through faith, we are then motivated to risk ourselves in loving relations with our neighbor. And I see a dynamic very much like that in the Hizmet movement, in individuals inspired by Mr. Gulen now around the globe to focus on three particular initiatives: building schools, developing social enterprises, businesses that help support the schools, and then engaging in dialogue, sponsoring events to bring people together, no matter their differences, to see how we might cooperate to build a more just, peaceful world.
Isn't that similar to many in countries of immigration where the missionaries came 100, 200, 300 years ago?
Yes. Often, you know, historically, of course, missionaries came first and then the gunboats came later. So you know, we have to be careful about an analogy with that history. There are no gunboats associated with Hizmet. It is truly a movement of people committed to civil society, so from the ground up. And in fact, the state has repeatedly persecuted Mr. Gulen for no reason other than because he is a Muslim.
The state of Turkey?
The Republic of Turkey, yes. Initially, the persecution came from the secular militarist Kemalist left. Whenever there was a coup in Turkey, and there were repeated coups throughout his life, he was born in 1938, he would get rounded up, detained, put in jail, and for 6 years he had to go on the run. More recently, the persecution has come from the political Islamists, from those on the nationalist right, such as the current president, Erdogan, who scapegoats Mr. Gulen because of his willingness to engage in dialogue, because of his embrace of Jews and Alevis and Kurds, even going so far as to depict Mr. Gulen with what is truly an Orwellian big lie. In other words, to accuse him of being a terrorist, which is a lot like calling Jesus a terrorist, in my humble estimation.
But he also met with Pope, was it Pope John Paul II?
John Paul II, yes. Yes.
So in a way, you say that he is building peace, he's building bridges, mm-hmm. and he's a Muslim, Turkish Muslim, and he's attacked by all sides, by the ones from the faith traditions that he comes from and by the country that he comes from.
Yes. He's been the perfect scapegoat for Mr. Erdogan to unify two very disparate groups in Turkey, the secularist left and the political Islamist right. Because he lives in Pennsylvania, you know, he's been there since 1999, Mr. Erdogan has been able to weave this conspiracy theory that somehow Mr. Gulen is sitting there in a control room with TV screens all over the place, pushing buttons, you know, manipulating this, which is complete and utter nonsense.
Have you visited him?
I have. you know, after I had a complete manuscript of the book done, I wanted to actually sift the evidence, interview people who were close to him and people who hated him in order to discover from the historical record who he was. And then, yes, I sat down with him after the book was completed to ask some very specific and focused questions. We had two brief 90-minute interviews, and I'm happy to report that my personal experience of him was as a gentle, kind, thoughtful man of spirit. And I could see how he would be an inspiration for many people around the globe.
So did he read your book?
I believe he has had, he doesn't read English, but I believe he has had people read to him and with him. And from what I understand, at least he's happy with it. I'm sure there are things we would argue over if we had an opportunity, but that's part of the spirit of the movement as well.
You have to get it translated into Turkish.
Yes. Well, that would be dangerous, too. But no, I would welcome that. part of the spirit of the movement is mutual consultation, istishara. Nothing happens without real good debate between people, and that actually builds a strong bond of trust through that debate.
And I read it only recently. There was an article in The Guardian with the title, "Turkish Government Destroys More Than 300,000 Books. Regime Says It Is Cracking Down on Anything Linked to Fethullah Gulen, the Muslim Cleric It Blames for the 2016 Attempted Coup." How did Gulen become so suspicious to the current Turkish government? So, because that's a lot.
Oh, it's terrible, and it's an example of the kind of respect for human culture and human rights that the current regime in Turkey has, which is none. It's been ruthless, and truly human rights violations have occurred. Mr. Gulen inspired people to work really hard, not only in politics, in the police, in the military, in the judiciary, and not primarily in those fields, but also in media. People close to Mr. Gulen started what became the leading selling newspaper in Turkey. Zaman means time. That was shut down by the Turkish government, and the assets were seized and then channeled to cronies of Mr. Erdogan.
Cronies?
Cronies. Mm-hmm. You know, cronies, friends. Mm-hmm. People close to him, including, and I don't know the details of this particular case, but some of the assets seized went to family members, to his son, Bilal. So there's a pattern of corruption that in 2012 and 2013, people inspired by Mr. Gulen and others in Turkey began to expose. So the reason Mr. Gulen and people of Hizmet are a threat to Erdogan is because they speak up for honesty. They seek to hold truth to, or they seek to speak truth to power and to hold people accountable to actually practice the democracy that they preach. And for being whistleblowers, they have now been scapegoated and persecuted. I did not know it was a crime. Mm-hmm. To speak up for the truth, and yet that is what has happened in Turkey.
So, in your opinion, what does it mean, Gulen's approach? How is it different to other Islamic approaches? Because there are lots of Islamic leaders who say that we have to give money to the poor, we have to put money aside, and we have to do our pilgrimage, which is all very similar to our Christian traditions. But is there anything that makes Gulen different to other Islamic leaders?
One of the beautiful principles that's at the core of Mr. Gulen's teaching and that is crucial to people of Hizmet is a Turkish term, hoşgörü. Now, it usually gets translated as tolerance into English, which is actually a very poor translation. The literal meaning is to see nicely. But even that is too thin or superficial. I heard it described, hoşgörü, described once by a colleague in Chicago, Dr. Scott Alexander, who is fluent in Arabic and understands Turkish very well. He said, to practice hoşgörü means to see another as God sees them with eyes of mercy and compassion, because at the very center of God for Muslims is the Bismillah. Bismillah al-Rahman al-Rahim. In the name of God, the merciful, the compassion, Muslims pray. And Mr. Gulen has taken that central theological teaching and put it into practice in modern ways in the modern world to build schools, to develop businesses, and to establish think tanks and dialogue centers all over the globe. There are other Muslim movements that have done similar things, but most of them have tried to ally with political forces. And what we have in the case of Mr. Gulen and people of Hizmet is what I call civil Islam. That is Islam from below, through the example of individuals, through the volunteerism and hard work of individuals, working through the rule of law, through democratic structures, in order to strengthen the societies wherever they land. And there are now people of Hizmet all over the globe. It's a very exciting development in what are often called by Mr. Gulen peace islands, which I think is a beautiful image here on this peaceful island.
Yeah, in the land of Aotearoa, the big long cloud.
Yes.
And so you just mentioned it's all over, it's spread all over in the world. But Gulen is a Turkish Muslim, so it spreads with the Turkish Muslims around the world. But how well is it known and respected in other Muslim countries where you don't have maybe Turkish Muslims, you have Arabic or other other cultures?
Well, of course, the world's most populous Muslim nation is Indonesia. And there are schools associated with Hizmet in Indonesia. And other Muslims are catching up to Mr. Gulen, I would put it. So if you look at what has happened in the world of Islam, my basic hypothesis is much of what we see in Wahhabism and the sort of rigorism and even in the terrorism is a lingering response to colonialism and occupation. And so what you have in Mr. Gulen and people of Hizmet is an alternative approach to the Wahhabi nationalist top-down Islam. And instead you have a movement that is committed to building bridges between religion and science. It's crucial to Mr. Gulen's teaching that we have the revelation of God in nature and the revelation of God in the Holy Quran. And there is no incompatibility between these two revelations because they both come from God.
That's interesting because the other day we had an observer from the Vatican here in Auckland, and he was American, and he was a scientist and a brother, and he connected the both of them, and he was explaining about how well he was received by all the popes that he worked for. So this is a similar approach, that you are not afraid of science because what we know is what God made us known.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And so many people of Hizmet are biologists and chemists and in IT and, you know, in all of the fields of human knowledge as faithful Muslims. And it is very much like, you know, St. Thomas Aquinas, who's, you know, the exitus et reditus curve. Everything comes from God and everything returns to God.
And what does he preach or talk about with the role of the women?
Mr. Gulen has been an advocate for the full inclusion of women in civil society as judges, in parliament, as teachers, as lawyers, as civic leaders. Sometimes the Hizmet movement, Turkey is a patriarchal culture, has struggled to catch up to Mr. Gulen in this regard. But one of the things that was important as I was writing Mr. Gulen's biography was to include the voices of women who have been inspired by him, who have done some extraordinary things, traveling all over the world, setting up relief agencies, leading relief agencies, working in hospitals as administrators, teachers. It's really quite extraordinary. But if you look at the public face of Hizmet still around the globe, it is led most frequently by men. But I know there are attempts to improve this because the understanding is that we're stronger when women and men both are in roles of leadership.
But I understand that in Turkey for many years, women could go to school and women were not treated differently at the schools. Is that right?
To a degree, yes. There was official equality. But in fact, the Turkish patriarchal culture was still very, very strong, even among the secularists. And what you see now, interestingly, is a movement to incorporate or for religious women to play more visible public roles in civil society. So if you read the novels of Orhan Pamuk, for instance, such as Snow, you can understand that sort of tension and how it plays out in a very distinctive way in Turkish culture and politics.
And Gulen, when he met personally with leaders of other religions, and including Pope John Paul II, St. Paul John Paul II,
yes.
What do you think these meetings were about? Was there anything announced afterwards, or did you hear something of what did he talk about with the Pope?
Well, I can tell you very directly what he talked about with the Pope. He had four particular initiatives that he encouraged in collaboration with Pope John Paul II. And I'm happy to say that the kind of conversation we're having here today is a result of that initiative. In other words, Mr. Gulen encouraged dialogue between Christians and Muslims, especially academic dialogues. And shortly after this meeting, there was a big gathering at Georgetown University in the U.S., and there now have been literally hundreds of such gatherings sponsored by Christian universities where Christians, Muslims, and Jews and secularists and Hindus and Buddhists and whoever else get together And struggle to address the problems we face around the globe, such as the climate crisis, such as the warfare between science and religion, such as poverty, literacy, etc. So out of that meeting with Pope John Paul II, and I could send you the actual letter that Mr. Guillen left with the Pope, came some very specific initiatives, several of which have borne great fruit already.
Well, that's wonderful. And so your task here in New Zealand is not just to travel the country.
No.
But you're going to, you're giving a talk. Well, the program is broadcast on Friday, so you will have given the talk already at the St. Columba Center. And are you visiting other parts of New Zealand also?
Unfortunately, it's a quick trip to New Zealand this time. God willing, there will be another trip in the future. But I did tour Australia giving talks in Brisbane, Canberra, Sydney, and Melbourne, trying to make people aware of who this man really is.
Thank you very much, John. That's very interesting what you've said. And, well, the book is available, so people can read the book and learn more about what you realized, what your experience is.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
And I just want to say a few words about what is coming up in our Mercy Spirituality Center. We have today, the talk about Chile, about Ana Maria de Vos Sanchez is going to talk about Mapuche spirituality and Spanish colonization in Chile. So it's today, Friday, the 6th of September from 7 to 9 p.m. And then tomorrow we have on Saturday, the 7th of September, 9:30 to 3:30, Sister Kathleen Rushton, who will give a presentation on slavery in the New Testament and displacement of peoples today. On Tuesday, the 10th of September, from 7 to 9 p.m., Father Mark Chamberlain will give a presentation on Ignatian spirituality with the title, Love is All Around Us in Disguise. And on Friday morning, the 20th of September, Margaret Bowater will facilitate a Dreamwork 202 workshop, 9:30 to 12:30. For all events at our center, please register with us per phone at Auckland 09-638-6238. Or through our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. Thank you very much, John, for having come here. I wish you a wonderful time here in New Zealand. Hopefully the weather will be beautiful and you'll get to see many nice places.
Thank you very much for having me, Beata.
In mercy.